London. So I want to mention that to come to this understanding that their understanding from the healing effect of Toba is wrong. When we say the same examples in their works, maybe they can come to this conclusion that there is another explanation for the healing effects of the Toba of Imam Hussein alayhi salam, which is in need of, I think, a separate session to talk about. The fact that we believe in both, referring to doctors and using medicine, and at the same time supplicating to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala prayer, and also using the Toba of Imam Hussein alayhi salam.
Right.
But how we can have all of them together, inshallah, I will explain the following session.
Inshallah, we will discuss this in the next upcoming program. Dear Sheikh, I thank you for your insightful knowledge. I also thank the dear listeners for tuning in. Yet again, you had been listening to Q&A on Islamic Beliefs, and I have been your host, Musa Al-Bahari. I thank you for your time and for tuning in.
موعظة ونور فيه شفاء للصدور وشفيعنا يوم النشور آياته تروي المدى وصفاته نبع الهدى نرقى الجنان بحبه لن تستقيم حياتنا هو القرآن والفرقان إليه تنصت الأكوان وفيه تعطر الآذان والقرآن ضياء يملأ الآفاق ونور يبعث الأشواق وفيه محاسن الأخلاق والقرآن
of Jalali Tehran.
Rubashavit Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Saeed Puraza, London.
Rasha Saglam, Istanbul.
Saeed Amin Olemi, Kabul.
Shahana Bhatt, Indian Administered Kashmir.
Round the world with reporters.
The Iranian radar system, dubbed Shams, can create simulated electronic warfare scenarios to train fresh military personnel. The system was unveiled together with other defense equipment, all built by the Iranian Army's Air Defense Force.
The fully indigenous Shams system is a long-range radar simulator and allows us to design and execute a range of war scenarios. This way we can enhance the preparedness of our staff members against potential missile attacks and other aerial threats.
Hormuz was another radar system that was put into service on Saturday. It's a medium-range tactical radar capable of detecting and tracking air targets at high, medium, and low altitudes. Iran's Air Defense Force says the new equipment will significantly increase the country's air defense capability.
The major feature of Hormuz radar system is that it can calculate the speed of the target while accurately calculating the distance and sending the data to the fire control systems. I should say that all of the equipment unveiled today and earlier were designed and produced using domestic know-how. We no longer need to import any such equipment from other countries.
Iran has for four decades been under U.S.-led arms embargoes, which prevent the country from purchasing any foreign-made arms. This has over the years prompted the Islamic Republic to try to develop its own weapons to ensure its security. Every year, the country unveils a range of domestically built defense equipment, from UAVs to missiles, a as a show of its military might against the backdrop of U.S. sanctions.
The Islamic Republic views U.S. sanctions as a tailwind that has pushed the country toward self-reliance. While these latest military equipment can be counted as a case in point, Army officials say this is just the tip of the iceberg, as Iran has indigenized over 80% of its defense arsenal. Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Pakistan has lost tens of thousands of its citizens and security personnel since late 2001 when Islamabad joined so-called U.S. war on terror. Pakistan provided the U.S. with its military bases to carry out attacks on Afghanistan and allow the NATO supply line to pass through Pakistan to the neighboring country. But it all backfired with the retaliatory attacks and massive public resentment against the U.S. and successive governments for supporting American imperialistic agenda across the region. After a recent humiliating exit of U.S. from Afghanistan and the return of Taliban government in Kabul, Islamabad has changed its pro-U.S. policy. Now Pakistan has decided to bring an end to two decades-long violence through negotiation with the different groups working under the umbrella of Pakistani brand of Taliban movement and other groups engaging in insurgency in southwestern Balochistan province.
In fact, I think some of the Pakistani Taliban groups actually want to talk to the to our government, for some peace, for some reconciliation. And we are in talks with some of the groups. I do not believe in military solutions. I'm anti-military solutions. So I always believe that, as a politician, political dialogue is the way ahead.
Before the change of guards in Kabul, Pakistan blamed India to have been using different militant groups from Afghan soil to fan insurgency in its southwestern and northwestern regions bordering with Afghanistan.
The Ashraf Ghani government and other hostile governments in Kabul were providing them conducive conditions to attack Pakistan. But now that the Taliban are there and Taliban have guaranteed or have assured Pakistan that the Afghan land will not be used will not be allowed to be used against Pakistan.
Many militant groups have repeatedly attacked in Pakistan on Beijing's economic and geostrategic interests linked with its global project known as Belt and Road Initiative. The mega project starts from Chinese province Xinjiang and passes through nearly 3,000 kilometer long road network of Pakistan before sailing through Arabian Sea to reach onwards rest of Asia, Africa, and parts of Europe. Both Washington and New Delhi have publicly opposed the China's mega project, which has challenged the economic hegemony of the U.S. Now Islamabad wants to win over the terrorist groups through a reconciliation process in an effort to wean them away from the foreign powers, using them to disrupt over $50 billion U.S. dollar investment of China in Pakistan. Javed Rana, Islamabad.
On Friday, in the Italian capital, over 3,000 Alitalia workers staged a new protest against the government's decision to shut down Italy's flag carrier since 1947. Alitalia is to be replaced by a slimmed-down state-owned airline called ITA, Italia Trasporto Aereo, that is planned to take over many of its assets. For years, Alitalia workers have held protests trying to block the morphing operation, which base unions say will result in the loss of thousands of jobs.
8,000 jobs will be slashed under the deal. Furthermore, we estimate that three external workers for each sacked Alitalia employee will find themselves unemployed. This is social butchery. Our country should be ashamed. The plan is to take a competitor like Alitalia out to make things easier for Air France, British Airways and Lufthansa.
In practical terms, the government is wiping the national collective agreement off. Workers in the aviation industry will no longer have any protection. They will become on-call employees. It's a shame that our largest left-leaning party and the largest unions have opted to team up with neoliberal forces.
Last month, the EU competition regulators surprisingly approved the morphing of debt-stricken Alitalia into a smaller company conceding that the new state-owned airline was not liable for repaying 900 million euros in illegal state aid received by its forerunner.
The demand is that we need Alitalia. Italy need a flag company. That's why we are here. And ITA is not that.
The new ITA airline will operate with less than half of Alitalia's fleet of aircraft. Pilot and air crew pay is set to be almost halved. ITA is reportedly set to introduce a new labor contract aimed at giving it greater flexibility and competitiveness.
The 74-year-old Italian flag carrier Alitalia is set to fly for the last time on October 15. On the same day, its new incarnation airline, ITA, will start operating with 2,800 employees. More than two-thirds of Alitalia's staff, however, will be laid off. Max Civili, Rome.
Iran's army ground forces on Friday launched a military exercise in the northwestern region close to the borders with Azerbaijan and Armenia. Artillery, drone, and electronic warfare units with aerial support from the Army's Airborne Division are participating in the exercise. The drill is codenamed Conquerors of Khaybar, a reference to the 7th century Battle of Khaybar, in which Prophet Muhammad and his army of early Muslims foiled a plot hatched by Jewish tribes. Iran's army ground forces commander, Brigadier General Qumars Haydari, who is leading the drills, says his country will not tolerate the presence of Israeli elements or terrorists in the region.
We respect the sovereignty of all countries, including our neighbors, but are strongly against the presence of the Zionist regime as well as the Daesh terrorists.
Iran has long voiced concern over what it calls the presence of Israeli elements and terrorists near its northwestern borders. Tehran says the terrorists assembled there at the invitation of a regional state at the height of a 2020 conflict between Armenia and Azerbaijan. Iran particularly accuses Israel of hatching plots in order to sow discord among Muslim nations, saying the regime sees its survival through creating insecurity. Some analysts say the drills send a clear and powerful message to other countries against any acts that challenge Iran's sovereignty and territorial integrity.
This one here in the northwest is very significant because it's sending out a clear message that Iran is not going to be passive. They're going to proactively be hunting and seeking out any forces which are trying to violate the stability of the Islamic Republic of Iran. And don't forget, it's been done because the Azerbaijani themselves have talked about a southern Azerbaijan, referring to the Iranian territories, which are the province of Azerbaijan, as essentially theirs. Now, this is something the Israelis, I'm sure, can stoke up really quite a lot in terms of trying to create division and fragmentation.
Moreover, General Haydari also made it clear that the Islamic Republic will not tolerate any change to the official borders. He has stressed that the transit routes in the region should remain safe and secure, and that all the regional countries should respect the flow of trade and energy through their borders. Last week, Iran's Islamic Revolution's Guard Corps held a separate military exercise in the northwestern province of Ardabil. The drill drew criticism from Azerbaijan's president Ilham Aliyev, who said he was surprised by Iran's decision since it hadn't held maneuvers in the region for about three decades. Iran's foreign ministry, however, reacted to Aliyev's remarks, saying the drills was meant to secure regional peace and security.
Afghanistan's Deputy Minister of Information and Culture, Zabihullah Mujahid, says the United States has violated the country's airspace by its drones. He accused Washington of violating all international law, as well as a U.S. Taliban peace deal signed between the two sides. He said the violations must be controlled and prevented.
Daesh presence in Afghanistan is not a big headache for us. Our forces are capable to uproot them here without receiving any foreign support. So the U.S. must honor Doha deal and stop violating our space.
Mujahid's statement followed remarks by Pentagon spokesman John Kirby. He said the U.S. retained all necessary authorities to execute over-the-horizon counter-terrorism operations. Kirby also said Washington remains confident in its capabilities moving forward without speaking to specific rules of engagement surrounding airstrikes. He said there is currently no requirement to clear airspace with the Taliban. Analysts say since the U.S. did not fulfill its commitments to Afghanistan over the past 20 years, it is not expected to honor other pacts like U.S.-Taliban Doha deal.
Violating Afghanistan's sovereignty is not a new move by the U.S. It has repeatedly broken its promises, mainly when it comes to respecting our country's sovereignty, even during the rule of former governments here.
Given the U.S. is insisting on continuation of drone strikes in Afghanistan without coordination with the Taliban, the group has also warned the U.S. of negative consequences of continuing violation of Afghanistan's airspace. The U.S. claims that it targets terrorist groups like Daesh with its airstrikes. However, evidence on the ground shows that innocent Afghans are usually the real victims of such attacks. One of the last U.S. drone strikes was in Kabul on August 29 and killed 10 members of a family, including 6 children. Syed Amin Alemi, Kabul.
Just tip of the iceberg on how humiliatingly the Taliban defeated the U.S. in Afghanistan's battlefield. The Pentagon now has finally made admission of its failures, which enabled the Taliban to take over the entire Afghanistan so swiftly.
We need to consider some uncomfortable truths, that we didn't anticipate the snowball effect caused by the deals that the Taliban commanders struck with local leaders in the wake of the Doha Agreement, and that the Doha Agreement itself had a demoralizing effect on Afghan soldiers. And finally, that we failed to grasp that there was only so much for which and for whom many of the Afghan forces would fight. The fact that the Afghan army that we and our partners trained simply melted away, in many cases without firing a shot, took us all by surprise.
If today the world needs to know why the Taliban are back in power, all the world has to do is do a deep analysis of why 300,000 well-equipped Afghan army give up without a fight.
Contrary to what Pentagon admitted before the U.S. Senate Armed Service Committee, as many as 22 Republican senators introduced a bill in the Senate to probe the role of regional countries with particular focus on Pakistan in the military defeat of U.S.-led NATO troops in Afghanistan. The bill proposes sanctions on regional countries, particularly Pakistan and nascent Taliban government in Kabul. After Afghanistan, Pakistan has suffered the most. Tens of thousands of people died. An estimated $250 billion losses occurred to the economy in the long-drawn retaliatory insurgency in Pakistan for supporting a U.S. war on Afghanistan.
The only reason we suffered so much was because we became an ally of the U.S., of the coalition, in the war against Afghanistan, where there were attacks being conducted from Afghan soil into Pakistan. At least there should have been a word of appreciation. But rather than appreciation, imagine how we feel when we are blamed for this, the turn of events in Afghanistan.
Pakistan sounded disappointed with what it called the ungratefulness of the West for ignoring its sacrifices in a war which people here always believed was not their war. Analysts believe that Islamabad is likely to get further closer to China and become part of the efforts to build up a block of regional countries in the event of U.S. economic sanctions on Pakistan. Javed Rana, Islamabad.
It was the biggest state intervention in the UK's labor market since World War II, introduced 18 months ago to help firms weather the economic storm whipped up by the pandemic. Popularly known as the furlough scheme, it's cost a whopping $94 billion. Without it, there are concerns that the job market will be flooded as job seekers need to find employment.
The young people in particular not doing well in this, but anybody on the borderline of low-paid jobs or into welfare benefit or an element of welfare benefit in their income, they are going to be hit very, very badly indeed.
Launched in March last year, the scheme was the brainchild of British Chancellor Rishi Sunak, covering 80% of a furloughed employee's wages. When it started, it helped save more than 11 million jobs. 18 months later, it was still supporting well over a million of them. The government is hopeful that the more than a million job vacancies will absorb workers coming off furlough. Critics say the decision to wind up the scheme will only intensify Britain's economic woes.
And there's going to be about 1.6 million people who are going to be unemployed, losing their jobs. And they will not be able to find jobs necessarily in other sectors of the economy. There are several reasons for that. Partly there's a lack of skills matching, and also because the conditions of the virus have taught people how bad so many of the jobs were. They were not full-time jobs. They were temporary, insecure, low-paid jobs. And a lot of people do not want to go back to those situations.
But it's not just the ending of the furlough that is a concern among Britons. A temporary increase in welfare payments, universal credit, and a moratorium on evictions for renters squeezed by the pandemic are also ending in October, at a time when consumers are facing a 12% rise in energy costs.
And all of that happening at a time when the country's economic recovery from COVID-19 is faltering, as announced by the Bank of England's governor just this week. And what that means for the people in Britain is that an autumn storm is on the way. Saeed Pourreza, London.
The funeral prayers for one of the eight members of the Islamic movement killed by the Nigerian security forces was attended by aggrieved members. The movement said the eight were cut down and killed when security operatives opened fire with live rounds during a peaceful trek of the Arba'in, an annual religious event undertaken by members of the Islamic movement.
They kill about eight people, which we are sure that now, as they used to do normally, after they kill, they will carry the dead body away. So also the same thing yesterday. They carried away the dead bodies. It is only one of our Muslim brothers by name Shamsuddin Abdurrahman we were able to take away from them.
The Nigerian police have denied that any member was killed during what they described as a provocative trek. Press TV visited a health facility where many injured victims of the attack were receiving treatment from bullet wounds. Members of the Islamic movement have continued to express outrage at the persistent attacks by security forces whenever they come out for religious events.
The security agent in Nigeria, they have been paid. They paid their salary and they provide them with weapons to protect the life and properties of the citizens. But in these days, they are using these weapons to attack the citizens that they are supposed to protect. Our offense to the government of this country is just coming out to show, to practice our religion the way we understand it.
In a statement, Amnesty International has expressed grave concern over the murder of the eight members of the Islamic movement in Nigeria. It called on the Nigerian authorities to put an end to the deadly crackdown on members of the Islamic movement, which it says has been going on since December 2015. Danjum Abdullahi, Abuja.
Presidents of Russia and Turkey held their face-to-face talks since the beginning of pandemic. After the talks, the two leaders confirmed that the mutual ties developed positively despite some problems.
Our negotiations are not always easy, but with a positive final result, our departments have learned compromises that are beneficial to both sides.
Syria was among the main topics of talks between the two leaders. In Syria, Russia serves as the main supporter of the Syrian government, while Turkey backs anti-government groups. Despite this, the two countries have been cooperating in seeking a political solution in the country.
Peace in the Syrian region depends on Turkish-Russian relations. Our joint steps on the Syrian issue are of great importance. the steps we have already taken were correct and cannot be changed.
Last year, Turkey and Russia reached a ceasefire agreement to put an end to war in Syria, Idlib. Turkey is concerned that an escalation of violence in northern Syria may lead to a new influx of refugees across its borders.
The two sides have to make a balanced relation when it comes to Syria, but it is not an easy task amid plots by the US and its allies. For example, the US did not object to the delivery of humanitarian supplies to Syria through the territory controlled by the Syrian troops, and this was done with an attempt to knock Russia and Turkey head on.
The talks between Erdogan and Putin came after U.S. President Joe Biden refused to grant a one-on-one meeting with his Turkish counterpart on the sidelines of the United Nations General Assembly.
Another pressing issue in Russian-Turkish cooperation is Ankara's purchase of Russian S-400 missile systems. On the eve of his visit to Sochi, Erdogan told reporters that he rejects any foreign pressure regarding this issue and intends to go ahead with his decision to the system. Marina Kartunova, Moscow.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran.
In the limelight.
Circus-like review of the 2020 vote commissioned by Arizona Republicans took another wild turn on Friday, 1st of October, when veteran election experts charged at the very foundation of its findings, the results of a hand count of 2.1 million ballots, was based on numbers so unreliable that they appear to be guesswork rather than tabulations. The article you're about to hear has been written by a New York Times journalist, Michael Wines and Nick Corazzaniti. The piece is titled, Arizona Vote Review Made Up the Numbers, Election Experts Say. Circus-like review of the 2020 vote commission by Arizona Republicans took another wild turn on Friday, 1st of October, when veteran election experts charged that the very foundation of its findings, the results of a hand count of 2.1 million ballots, was based on numbers so unreliable that they appeared to be guesswork rather than tabulations. The organizers of the review made up the numbers. The headline of the experts' report reads, the experts, a data analyst for the Arizona Republican Party and two retired executives of an election consulting firm in Boston, Massachusetts, said in their report that workers for the investigators failed to count thousands of ballots in a pallet of 40 ballot-filled boxes delivered to them in the spring. The final report by the Republican investigators concluded that President Biden actually won 99 more votes than were reported, and that former President Donald Trump tallied 261 fewer votes. But given the large undercount found in just a sliver of the 2.1 million ballots, it would effectively be impossible for the Republican investigators to arrive at such precise numbers, the experts said. Rod Thompson, a spokesman for Cyber Ninjas, the company hired to conduct the inquiry in Arizona, rejected the experts' claim. We stand by our methodology and complete final report, he said. Investigators went through more than 1,600 ballot-filled boxes this summer to conduct their hand recount of the election in Maricopa County, the most populous county in the state. Both they and the Republican-controlled state Senate, which ordered the election inquiry, have refused to disclose the details of the hand count. But a worksheet containing the results of the hand count of 40 of those boxes was included in a final report on the election inquiry released a week ago by Cyber Ninjas. The three election experts said the hand count could have missed thousands or even hundreds of thousands of ballots if all 1,600 boxes of ballots were similarly undercounted. Their findings were earlier reported in the Arizona Republic. For months, the Cyber Ninjas effort had been the lodestar of the conservative movement. The foundational investigation that would uncover a litany of abuses and verify countless conspiracies, proving a stolen election. But the review was criticized from the start for unprofessional and unorthodox methods and partisan influence. Now the experts' findings on the vote review compound withering analysis, debunking a wide range of questions raised in the review about the counting of votes and conduct of the election. Nonetheless, the review has been embraced by Donald Trump and his followers, even as its findings have been overwhelmingly refuted. Noting that the leaders of the Arizona Review had zero experience in election audits, the experts concluded, "We believe the Ninjas' announcement that they had confirmed to a high degree of accuracy the election results of one of the largest U.S. counties is laughable." Laughable or not, none of it's changed the fact that Joe Biden won the state by about 10,500 votes and Maricopa County by roughly 45,000 votes in several official tallies of the vote. Katie Hobbs, the Democratic Secretary of State in Arizona, said the report's findings vindicated criticisms by the Cyber Ninjas process. It was clear from the start that the Cyber Ninjas were just making it up as they went along, Katie Hobbs said in a statement. "I've been saying all along that no one should trust any results they produce, so it's no surprise their findings are being called into question. What can be trusted are actual election officials and experts, along with the official canvas of results." The inquiry into the election has been repeatedly condemned as a sham by election experts and denounced by the Republican-dominated Maricopa County Board of Supervisors, which oversaw the 2020 presidential vote. Critics note that the chief executive of Cyber Ninjas has spread false allegations that Arizona voting machines were rigged to ensure Donald Trump's defeat. The summer-long investigation was financed almost entirely by nearly $7 million in donations from Trump supporters. The experts based their conclusion on a worksheet containing a slice of the hand count results that the Republican investigators published in the report on their inquiry. The worksheet shows that investigators counted 32,674 ballots in 40 of the 1,634 boxes of ballots they were reviewing. But official records show, and the investigators' own machine count of the 2.1 million ballots effectively confirms, that those 40 boxes actually contained 48,371 ballots, or 15,692 more ballots than were counted. The worksheet indicated that 9 of the boxes had not been counted at all, but even if those boxes were excluded from the tally, the count of the remaining boxes fell 4,852 ballots short of the correct total, according to the experts. The charge of a ballot undercount comes atop the debunking by experts and Maricopa County officials of virtually all of 22 implications of voting irregularities involving more than 50,000 voters in the Cyber Ninjas report. Among them, a claim that 23,400 mail-in ballots may have come from addresses that voters no longer occupied was based on research using a commercial address database that itself did not include 86,391 of the county's registered voters, and like most lists, relied on sources that are often inaccurate. It also ignored the fact that voters may legally cast ballots and then move on. And moving is common. More than 280,000 Maricopa County households moved in 2019 alone. Another claim that thousands of voters returned more ballots than they received misconstrued a data file that makes a new entry every time a damaged or incomplete ballot is corrected. Yet another claim that precincts counted 836 more votes than were recorded ignored the fact that the records of some 3,600 voters, such as abused spouses and police officers, are not made public for security reasons. And an insinuation that 5,295 Maricopa County voters may have double voted because residents of other counties had the same names and birth years was spot-checked by county officials and found baseless. The outsiders were, in fact, other people. With similar reviews now set for Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, and Texas, it is increasingly clear that Arizona's partisan review succeeded while it failed, by amplifying baseless talking points while failing in any actual way to back up Donald Trump's claims of a rigged election. The Arizona Star reviews in other states seem likely to follow the same script, with the blessing of the Republican political leaders who are promoting them, said Nata Persily, the Stanford University law professor, elections expert, and scholar of democracy. For those who are pushing the fraud narrative, the actual truth is besides the point, he said. The idea that the election was stolen is becoming a tribe-defining belief. It's not about proving something at this point, it's about showing fealty to a particular description of reality. Indeed, in the wake of the initial Cyber Ninjas report, Republicans in the Pennsylvania Senate only furthered their resolve to press ahead with a review of the election, one that includes a request for driver's license numbers and partial social security numbers of all 7 million Pennsylvania voters. The historic audit in Maricopa County is complete and significant findings have been brought to light, State Senator Doug Mastriano, a Republican and lead proponent of the election review, said in a statement last week. If these types of issues were uncovered in Maricopa County, imagine what could be brought to light from a full forensic audit in other counties around the United States who process mass amounts of mail-in ballots. On Friday, 1st of October, Robin Voss, the Speaker of the Wisconsin Assembly, signed multiple subpoenas issued to the head of the Elections Commission in Milwaukee, the biggest city in the state and home to the largest concentration of Democratic voters, with a substantive request for documents, including communication between the city and state election boards. Robin Voss, in an interview this week, reiterated his commitment to investigating the 2020 presidential election with a presumption that there were mistakes in the administration. I think we kind of have to accept that certain things were done wrongly, figure out how to correct them, or else we'll never go to have public confidence, Mr. Voss said.
IRIB English Radio presents Viewpoints.
Viewpoints.
With the presence of different scholars.
The presence of different scholars. IRIB English Radio.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Assalamu alaikum to you, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. This is Viewpoints, an analysis on the speeches and thoughts of the leader of Iran, Imam Sayyid Ali Khamenei. I'm Atta, the host of this program. With me in the studio for today's discussion are two Islamic experts from the Islamic House of Qom, Sheikh Qasem Mohammadi and Brother Ali Arabian. Assalamu alaikum to both of you.
Wa alaikum assalam wa rahmatullah.
So in the series of the program Viewpoints regarding the speeches of the leader of Iran, Imam Sayyid Ali Khamenei, we are mainly concerned with the role that the human beings might have in this life and how Islam and a religious leader like Imam Sayyid Ali Khamenei look at human beings in different aspects and dimensions. Okay, for today's discussion, we want to talk about the important concept of progress and development as tackled by the leader of Iran, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei. You know, when we talk about progress and development in today's world, the first things that comes to our mind is this technical development and the industrial progress and development that we see in today's world. I think sometimes, you know, it needs a model, a new model. I mean, in order, because we have the teachings of Islam, mm-hmm. we have the modern developments and the progress over here.
Yeah.
There are some people needed who have mastery over both and can shape a kind of model for the Muslim societies, isn't it? What's your take on creating a kind of new model?
Definitely, Islam is not against development and let's say progress of the human being and whatever actually is regarding with the development, whether industrial or public welfare, whatever it is, and we are talking about. So it is 100% going with whatever Islam actually says. As for a model, I think the model has been introduced 14th century ago, because when Islam came with a revolution against oppression, tyranny, and let's say lack of social justice, and this is what the let's say the lost element in the life of the human being, which was actually introduced there. We see that the Holy Prophet himself was working, and Imams of Ahlul Bayt, they have been working, and they were wealthy people. At the same time, they were doing infaq. They were giving alms to the needy. So it means that Islam wants us to work, to earn, to make money, and at the same time, consider the others. In order that no poor, no needy person exists in the society. So this model actually is the best model that we are
after.
Isn't
it very much idealistic look at the world, no poor living in the world? Because we could not see this even during the life of the prophets and the infallibles. You know, the poor were there and the riches getting richer. Brother, this is the problem. We have it from the first day of the world up to the end.
Look, brother, when we are talking about a model, I mean, theoretically, the model is available. Then this is another issue to see its realization is something else. As for the realization of it, so at the time of the Prophet, this Baytul Mal was actually distributed rightly among the people.
Whether the caliphs were the imam, of course, not the imam.
At the time of even Imam Ali al-Islam, it was, and what was the reason of martyrdom of Imam Ali al-Islam?
Mm-hmm.
So in this world, we are saying the model, the best model is available. But those who those who actually attacked this model and did not let this model to materialize, they were available 14 centuries ago, and they are available today.
Sometimes I myself, as a Muslim, as a Shiite Muslim living in Islamic Republic of Iran, think that we are playing in the same pitch, in the same field that the Western capitalism are playing. I mean, we are using the means and we are benefiting from them. And we say that we are working for Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, but we are preoccupied with them. Sometimes we lose the final cause and ground. And just look at these Muslim lands, which are very much developed around, especially in the Arab Peninsula, near the Arab countries. And all around, the rich becoming richer, the poor becoming poorer. This is the problem that the Muslim lands also have. I mean,
come on, brother. Do you really consider those as development? You know, being just,
I do want to say,
hanging on.
Yeah, I do want to say, although they are developed, technically speaking and industrially speaking, but the rich becomes richer and poor becomes poorer.
And at the same, I don't believe that they are developed. You know, having money, you know, the petrol dollars, and you know, buying from that country and the other, it doesn't mean that they are developed. Yeah, you know, what I understand from development is it should be accompanied by dignity as well. So you are a developed person, you know, but a robot being controlled, a puppet being controlled by other countries, you know, not caring about your brothers, you know, other lands being. Actually wronged and being oppressed.
At least every state and country is affiliated with the power today in the world, whether it be the Arab countries who are affiliated with some part
that's
of the West,
exactly the
or whether it be some of the countries of the Western.
That's exactly the kind of development that Islam is not actually ascribing, and you know, and is actually going for and prescribing. So,
whether we want it or not, you know, this model needs to be defined.
Yeah.
Islamic Republic of Iran, I think, of course, it's in its very early stages, you know, after 42 years, it's only 42 years old, you know, a person is getting mature. But the case is that these role models and these models has to be created by the Muslims all around the world. So are we doing this based on the Islamic principles? Really? Do we do that?
You know, this is actually, this is not what the claim of even the founders of the revolutions were and is actually now. What we have in the sayings of Imam Khomeini and Imam Khamenei, what they are actually going after is a Islamic civilization, and for sure we have not got there yet. And for sure we are trying to, and actually we have a sort of plan for getting there. But you know, you have to consider they are not just, you know, the power or the potential that you have. There are some, you know, impediments that may come into your path and to your way that halts you from getting there and being successful.
Right.
And there are many of them, actually.
Yes.
You know, falling on Iranian nation and the Iranian government.
All the truth seekers in the world.
Sorry,
okay.
I wanted to say that this was the mission of all the prophets from the beginning of the whole earth, the beginning of the history, from the prophet Adam till today. All the prophets came, as Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala says in Quran, that لَقَدْ أَرْسَلْنَا رُسُلًا بِالْبَيِّنَاتِ وَأَنزَلْنَا مَعَهُمُ الْكِتَابَ وَالْمِيزَانَ لِيَقُومَ النَّاسُ بِالْقِسْطِ.
That's right.
So look, all of them came to guide us, and at the same time actually make social justice among the human being.
Okay.
So can we now criticize Prophet Nuh, let's say Noah, that why in your society this, let's say, distribution of wealth was not looked at, I mean, was not seen and was not observed? So we can simply answer you, brother, look, I tried my best, I brought the message, but the people who were in front of me, they did not let others to be benefited. The same comes in the course of history.
Brother, this is the question now, that sometimes we criticize the Western humanism and Western world for them being only developed in terms of, sorry,
look,
in
when
terms
we criticize,
of the physical
we
ones.
Criticize them in the sense that they are against this ideology, this worldview.
But at the same time, we lose the other side. We emphasize on the spiritual developments, and we lose the spiritual developments. At the same time, we do not have the bodily one. What's your answer?
Look, bro, if we lose a part of our mission, it has nothing to do with the theory itself, with the base and foundation itself. Okay. Then this has no problem. Theoretically, it is correct in its place. But I was not a good person to function based on that. So it means I have not done my job well. So in case, like any other, let's say, believer or pious people, like prophets or, let's say, the imams, I have done my job in the right way, so the consequence of that would be a prosperous society with pleasure, worldly and, let's say, spiritually.
And let alone those problems that have been made for prophets and actually are being made for a country, for an Islamic country like Iran, in order not to, you know, get to that welfare that or development that you're talking about. Actually, at least me and my brother, we've been to other countries, and we've been to Muslim countries, and the way that treats Iranians, you know, is outstanding. Why? Because even though that they know that we are, you know, we have some problems, they are familiar with the situation in Iran, they know that we are embargoed and sanctioned, there are many sanctions against us, but but at the same time, they know this, that when it comes to prioritizing, you know, which is the prior one, which one goes first, the dignity of a country, supporting, you know, a country, a Muslim country like Palestine, that are being, you know, oppressed by the Israelis, and having many problems, like, you know, having these sanctions that are halting them, that are, you know, impeding them from getting to more development. Which one is more important? And they understand, you know.
This,
I mean,
independent identity and dignity you are referring to is very important. But the case is that in this global village that the peoples are today is wearing with these mixed races, who's gonna you give originality? I mean, this is a very important question. And when you look at just the definitions that exist out of the religion of Islam in different schools of thought, which all of them believe we can get you successful and we can bring you success in today's world and the other world through this prescription and that prescription, I think this is a wrong attitude. We can get to the original source of Islam, the pure Muhammadan Islam, as said, the Ahlul Bayt one and the teachings, and that way it's possible, but I think it's very difficult to do.
Why is it difficult?
Because at the time of the infallible Imams, they themselves were present and the people were not successful in doing so. I mean, at least the satanic powers did not let them, let alone to the modern world and the 21st century. I know the camp of Batil and Haq, both of them are working, challenging each other, okay? And the good people are acting, both hiddenly speaking and, you know.
So we can continue with whatever we have. Then yes, we can leave alone whatever.
Let me ask you something. We're not any corrupt commander or, authority in the government of Imam Ali alayhi salatu wasalam. For sure there were. Many of them. Actually, we have some records that, they were punished by Ali ibn Abi Talib alayhi salam. So
the question is that the original theory is intact, okay? Mm-hmm. It is complete.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, what you say in terms of theory is good. But in terms of application, when it gets to the hands
so
of the people...
So we need to...
Okay, it will be wrong interpretation.
We need to think on the problems that we find in its application and materialization.
Okay.
So we have to resolve and actually solve those issues.
So act in a way that brings us both prosperity in this world and the hereafter.
So
and
we
this
have
is
to
difficult, you know?
And we have to remove the obstacles.
Yeah.
Well, obstacles are from actually two kinds. One external and some internal.
Yes.
Internal with the kind of, let's say, selfishness that me and the like of me have, actually.
Yes. Here, theocracy, in the true sense of the word, if one rules over the world, the people has to get back into their fitra, but we are busy so much with our surroundings in today's world, especially in the 21st century. You see how the media is working on the minds of the people. The people sometimes are forgetting themselves, let alone to think about the God inside themselves. So this is what the human beings are busy with in today's world. Shaykh Qasim Muhammadi and Ali Al-Abiyan, thank you much for your presence in the program Viewpoints.
Thanks to you, bro.
And thank you much, dear listeners, for listening to us on IRIB English Radio. This is Viewpoints. For more information, visit our website at parstoday.com/en. Also, visit our YouTube channel and Instagram page, Call of Islam Radio. To another episode, God bless you. Fi amanillah.
The same when I'm too concerned by what they say. Why should I when I have you to doubt you would be the worst mistake. Deep inside I know that amidst all the darkness and everything which makes no sense, I know that you exist. Guides me through my darkest nights, shows me right from wrong, a world that often lies. As I don't need anyone, anything in life, but you. No, I don't need anyone to show me my way. No, I don't need anyone but you.
This is the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1520 to 1620 UTC on the following frequencies. 41 meters, 7,410 kilohertz for Indian subcontinent. And FM 91.5 megahertz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Heartbird, Eutelsat 3B, and IranSat or Badr 5, and via internet. Our internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.